Let's get this show on the road. Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And we hope that you are doing awesome right now. Gotta change it up a little bit.
Well, yeah. It is super late at night.
Yeah.
But today's topic is comics.
Because comics are awesome.
Comics are rad.
And I just really wanted to do something light and fun and whatnot. I mean, I just watched the Daredevil miniseries on Netflix.
Speaking of light and fun.
Yes. Clearly it's not. But as I was watching it, more so watching this than any other superhero movie I watched, I really, really, really missed reading comics and was really spurred on. I want to go down and check out some canonical Daredevil runs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this, like, Daredevil did it more so than the movies, because when I look at the Daredevil series, I think that that's almost the perfect iteration or the perfect future of comic book presentations in a cinematic form. For movies, there's often a trade-off that you either have to do multiple movies to do proper character setups. You know, you have to do an origin story, then you have to somehow raise the stakes. But usually by the time you hit the third movie, it just, you know, like, the stakes feel sometimes artificial or whatever. And a lot of times when you try to cram too much into one movie, doesn't work. You know, it's poorly executed plot-wise. But then at the same time, sometimes with TV shows, they can start off great, they can have great seasons, but you often have a lot of filler and it gets dragged on because of ratings and whatnot. And, like, for example, Smallville, I think, suffered from that. It did drag on a little too long, where Netflix or some of the other, like, the British, like BBC, do it with the shorter runs per season or per serial. So a 12 to 13 episode run, 40 minutes to an hour for episode, nice, slow build-up, gives you time to explore your characters, to let the actors have fun with the roles, and do all sorts of really great stuff. And so in watching that, I know we were supposed to be talking about comic books in general, but in watching that, I'm like, man, like, I know Daredevil's supposed to be awesome, and I know of a couple of really good stories. I want to go down to the comic book shop and just start grabbing a bunch of stuff and reading. You know, I think it's Daredevil Yellow by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, I believe, was one of the collections back in the day. Alex Maleev, I can't pronounce his last name, but he did. He was the artist when Brian Michael Bendis took over for a while and did a run.
Yeah,
I remember all of those from back. When Wizard magazine was still up and running, and they would showcase various stories. I remember all those, but I've been out of touch with comics, especially since Wizard stopped making a physical magazine. They've moved it all online, and it's just I miss comic books.
Fair enough.
So that's why I proposed it as a topic for today.
So, what's your favorite comic book? Icebreaker time. What is your favorite comic book? Like, or comic series, or whatever.
It would probably change once I start digging all of my comics out of boxes, but the one that stands out the most was a book by Mark Wade. No, not Mark Wade. Mark Wade. I might be mispronouncing his last name.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and Alex Ross, called Marvels. It was a mini-series, a kind of, you know, from a journalist's point of view, looking at superheroes as they were coming out.
Yeah, the 1950s Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Mostly I was attracted to it because Alex Ross's artwork. I have several.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I have several of his books, or I have a whole encyclopedia dedicated to Alex Ross's artwork. And at one point I wanted to draw comics the way Alex Ross did. Maybe not paint them. I've never been good at painting, but even looking at his sketches, always was incredibly inspirational, because he didn't do that exaggerated muscle structure, so it just looked so incredible.
Yeah.
And so I remember the Marvels story being very touching, and it's the one that sticks out in my mind the most.
Fair enough. I love Marvels. Marvels was awesome. Ruins was also awesome, which was the counterpart series. It captures the notion of superheroes being larger than life, and establishes the relationship of ordinary citizens with superheroes and the give and take of that. But my favorite comic book is decidedly more cynical. I thought about it. I have probably read about 10 or 20,000 comic books over the course of ever. I got into it in my undergrad. But the comic book that got me to rediscover comic books, which was recommended to me, I was reading a ton of web comics, and it was recommended by Jay Grant, who did a bunch of different comics. He did Phlegm. I think he still does the comic about his cats, which I think has spun off into something else now. He's a really funny guy, really, really, really sort of on-point guy. This is going back about 10 or 12 years, but he introduced me to Transmetropolitan. Transmetropolitan was written by Warren Ellis. 60 issues, 5 years of comics, and it was all about this sick dystopian future and a journalist who wrote stories about it. So, Spider Jerusalem was the journalist in question, and all he did was look at this world. And it was a lot of transhumanist stuff. It was a lot of really interesting sort of takes on contemporary media at the time. And it was sort of a, here's what happens when we write this forward into a future so far in the future we don't know when it is or care when it is. You know, the city doesn't even have a name anymore. It's just the city. It doesn't matter. What matters is the stories of the people who live in it and what that's like. And I love science fiction, and I love the sort of dark cynicism that it came along with. It really hit me, and it was that's what got me reading other Warren Ellis comics at first, like Planetary, and then back into superhero comics. And you know, I read a lot of the classic stuff like Sandman and Preacher and Invisible, which was a close runner for second favorite comic. Grant Morrison's Invisibles is fucking weird, but great.
Mm.
Sort of this weird eco-anarchist shamanic romp through 1980s Britain. Like, you're like, yes, those are all words. I understand that those are words. Sure. But yeah, that is what it is. And we talked about it during the writing episode. A lot of what I love about writing is symbols. And there are a few stories that incorporate more sort of symbols and symbol rearranging than comic books.
Mm.
So, I mean, we want to talk about our history with comic books. I mean, what got you started in comics? What is...
The early days of comics was largely how you get any kid into comics that doesn't have a gatekeeper to usher them in. So I didn't have somebody who...
It's the opposite of what gatekeepers do.
Sorry.
But I understand what you mean.
Yeah, you don't have somebody who has the comics and then shows it to you. So for me, my earliest comics were largely, I see it on the drugstore shelf and I want to get it. So I think the first comic I ever bought was the issue of Ninja Turtles. It had Raph and some anthropomorphic fox coyote female character. Didn't know who she was. I didn't buy enough comics to ever really find out who she was. But they looked like they were in danger on the cover and scared and stuff. And I don't know, just the artwork reached out to me.
Oh, yeah.
So that was probably the first comic I bought. Another comic I distinctly remember buying was when Superman lost his powers and came back as Blue Superman, Blue Suit Superman.
Yep.
Which everybody hates and whatnot. But at the time, I saw it. It was a black covered comic with Superman on it, and all of the white sections of his costume had the glow-in-the-dark ink on it, so that so you could shine the light on there and check it out in the dark, and then all of the lightning bolts and stuff on his costume would all glow. So that marketing gimmick alone was amazing to my young mind. But that was largely the extent of my comic book experience, because the flip side of it was, whereas I didn't get into comic books, I got into superheroes through drawing. So my uncle George drew me two of these wonderful Spider-Man pictures. I still have them framed in the basement, of just Spider-Man crawling up a wall and swinging through New York City. And then he bought me How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, which was my introduction in how to draw superheroes. And so that's when I draw, my technique is largely born out of that. So the superhero proportions, which is why I had a hard time drawing normal people, because I typically draw the exaggerated height and exaggerated width of the superheroes. And then I bought a ton. I bet you I have them all still in a box of, like, how to draw manga, how to draw comics, how to draw superheroes and villains and stuff. Just all of these how to draw books that I never really got a lot better. I did it for a little bit, but then I got into Dragon Ball Z, and just any hope of drawing Western comics at the time was gone. I just threw myself into anime. So I didn't really do a lot of comics at the time. And then I came back to it in high school when I started to pick up Wizard magazine. So that gave me a general broad stroke of how the industry was doing. And then when special events were going on, I would go out and pick up those books. So I picked up Invincible, the first volume. Ultimate Spider-Man, when they introduced Venom.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up that in trade. Ultimates 1, and I think Ultimates 2, but I only distinctly remember Ultimates 1.
What is the Ultimates? Just...
Oh, sorry. When Marvel Comics decided that their continuity being...
Assuming that our entire audience isn't gigantic comic book nerds.
Yeah. Marvel decided that at the time, 40 years of continuity was a lot for a person to get involved or get introduced into comics. So they had a thought experiment. What if we release the comics in modern day without the baggage of continuity? How would it play out? And so the first ones, I believe, was Ultimate Spider-Man, or maybe Ultimate X-Men. I don't remember which one came first, but they were the two flagship ones. And then the Ultimates was the Ultimate Universe's version of the Avengers.
Yep.
So basically, now that I think about it, other than who is the artist? Brian Hitch, I believe, was the artist on the Ultimates, the first, or maybe the entire run. Brian Hitch and Mark Millar decided to model Nick Fury after Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
That's probably the only influence that comic had, but otherwise that comic was hyper realistic and dark and gritty.
I disagree.
You really?
Yeah, I think that the Ultimate Universe is sort of the foundation for the new Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I would have to go back and reread it, but I don't remember that one.
Iron Man is highly similar. I mean, the story elements are different, but you can definitely see a lot of Robert Downey Jr.'s character in Iron Man. The notion of Black Widow and Hawkeye as core members of the Avengers.
See, I think they came in Volume 2, which is why I don't distinctly remember
that. But and that, just, you know, the ideas like the art and design on things, notion of things like the Triskelion,
okay,
helicarriers, stuff like that. I spent a bunch of time reading Ultimates, but it's a lot of it for me is the tone is very similar.
Okay.
Between them. And I also remember the Fantastic Four movies, for example. Ultimate Fantastic Four was a pretty good time. It was also a Warren Ellis comic book, mm-hmm. So I picked that one up. And a lot of Ellis's writing is echoed word for word in the Fantastic Four movies, which are not technically part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But
The ones from early mid 2000s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah, like there's a line in the second one, the one with Galactus, where Reed Richards says, blah, 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 this is why, I'm a nerd. This is why I'm married to the hottest girl in the world, and you're the jock. You're an idiot, and you're standing here asking for my help. That is literally a line straight out of Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it has a lot to do with it. I think that as comic books, they didn't play as well because people are looking for different things. But as movies, they seem to be doing great. And mm-hmm. they're a little more light. And the translation of the movies is they're a little more light.
Mm-hmm.
My history with comic books is sort of scattered. I mean, I got into them as a kid. I bought Spider-Man comic books and Ninja Turtles comic books. I distinctly remember deciding I would be a comic book collector one day. and buying the foil cover and at the first like 8 to 12 issues of Spider-Man 2099, which was not a comic for children.
Yeah.
Like, I have gone back and reread that, and it was not bad, but it was not for kids. Like, damn. I mean, it wasn't heavy metal or anything, but it was probably the reason I'm as messed up as I am. That's probably not true.
No.
Now, I rediscovered comics with Transmet. I never got into drawing on account of I'm crap at it. But I rediscovered it with Transmetropolitan, and then I started reading a lot of the canon comics, you know, Sandman, and then I discovered the Vertigo imprint, and I was like, oh, it's like comics for grown-ups. Mm. And I read literally everything in it. And I was like, oh, DC makes some neat superhero comics. Let's read a bunch of those. And I got really sort of fixed on the mythology and characters and, you know, like, legacy heroes and the Justice Society. And, like, I did a bunch of work in my undergrad sort of pulling comic books for philosophy and talking about comic books and essays on media. It was a lot of fun. Because I got sort of obsessed with the symbols in comics. Like, the narrative grabs me, it's easy to pick up, it's easy to put down, and a lot of them are really sort of smartly and interestingly written. Mm. Or a lot of the ones that I found. Like, I mean, that's the thing, is if a comic book is it only takes me, you know, it takes me less than 3 minutes to read. So if I'm bored of it, like, you're done. Mm. If you're a punchy superhero comic, like, I used to love them when I was a kid. I remember buying, like, tracking down at the used bookstore all the Maximum Carnage books, because I was like, damn, it's got Spider-Man, it's got Carnage, it's like gonna be like the coolest thing ever. And I mean, yeah.
Do you ever read the like Spider-Man and Iron Man novelizations?
I have a couple of them.
I believe
I have a couple of them on these shelves behind us. If I were to look hard enough, they're in fact down there on Ryan's left is a novelization of Batman Nightfall, when Batman got his back broken by Bane. Because I was still a tiny nerd, I just didn't have the money for comic books usually. But these were just regular books, so I could buy them in, like, book club and, like, you know, find them at bookstores and at the libraries and things like that. And so I would read them there. But yeah, I mean, I really got heavy into it when I was an adult, and I was just it was a thing I could read in between papers. And yeah, if it was a punchy superhero comic, I would throw it away in a moment. The only thing I think I still have that's straight punchy superhero is Wildcats. You may remember they had a TV show for a little while.
I keep thinking SWAT Cats.
No, Wildcats and SWAT Cats are vastly different.
Yeah.
But the neat thing about Wildcats, and they're sort of my favorite comic now, which is really weird, because there's lots of things I like more than that, and lots of things that are sort of more attached to the canon than that. I did go through that phase in my early 20s where I was really into Frank Miller's Batman, and then I grew up and became an adult.
I do want to read 300.
It's a good time, but...
I mean, I love the movie.
Eventually you will grow up and become an adult.
Yeah.
But Wildcats was their first whole volume was all punchy superheroes in, and they started as an Image comic, and then they eventually got picked up by DC in the Wildstorm label.
Wait, that wasn't Rob Liefeld, was it?
No, Wildcats was Jim Lee. It'll be in the show notes.
Okay. No, I'm thinking Youngbloods. That's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
Same universe though.
Yep.
But they, in their second volume, spoilers, they've been fighting this war on behalf of these aliens, and fighting these aliens on Earth who've lived in secret for thousands of years, and they're good aliens and bad aliens, and eventually they all pile all the good aliens who are on their team into a ship, and their team is made up of good aliens and people who are descended from good aliens, and they all go back to the good alien home planet where nobody has been in 10,000 years. And they find out that the war ended 10,000 years ago, and actually good alien planet kind of sucks and good aliens are kind of dicks. So for a whole volume, they're just like, Jesus, good aliens are dicks. They're kind of oppressing all these people. There's all this bullshit political maneuvering, and they're gonna... They just don't care. It's horrible. We're going home. So they come back to Earth. And they're like, okay. Being a punchy-punchy super team is stupid. And they're gonna do all kinds of stuff. And they go out, and some of them go on freelance, and some of them go, and their super smart android guy takes over the company that one of the good aliens was running, and he's just like, you know what? The world does need heroes, but not really superheroes, and not really superheroes who just punch each other. So I'm just going to change the world if that's cool with you guys. And he, like, invents a new battery and invents a car. And he's like, here, what would the world do with free energy? Let's see how that works. Let's remove people's need to hurt each other for resources and make actual change. And I love the fact that it evolves into that, and it becomes this post-hero comic where people are doing things that matter. Because beating up aliens in a secret war, while it seems cool, doesn't really matter. Like, your best case scenario is everything goes back to the way it was.
Until they escape from jail again.
Yeah, but things are kind of crap.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that was as an adult, that was the comic book that sort of, you know, wowed me. And I sort of fell out of it, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, as I just got, you know, had other stuff to do and not as much time to read, and
mm-hmm.
went to grad school.
That does suck up a lot of time.
What makes comics important to you, though?
So on one level, there's a nostalgia to it, that mm-hmm. these were the people that I looked up to and, to a certain degree, aspired towards, as much as you can aspire towards a super
sure.
heroic
sure.
being. But now, I don't know if they were always, if comics were always smart and clever, or if they've become that recently. It's I don't know enough about the history of comics, but I really buy into the idea of comics as being the modern mythology.
Yeah.
And while comics are not the only way to explore interesting issues, it is a different way of doing it, with characters that you know and understand well enough that you don't have to do a lot of the establishment stuff. You can just jump in and start exploring these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one really touching scene that I can think of that just is a beautiful interpretation of this. There's this, I don't remember in which comic it was, there's just this woman on the edge of a building, and she's thinking about jumping, and she feels like she has got nothing left to live in the world. And it's one of those scenes where Superman comes up behind her. He doesn't pull her back, but he starts talking to her and talking about her pain and whatnot. And I don't remember the exact dialogue exchange, but basically tells her that she is worth living. And then the last shot is she's embracing him and holding on to him. And he's, I think, just floating there in the air. You know, and it's just this really touching moment that superheroes are often about fighting against unstoppable enemy forces, and it's a lot of physicality and stuff. But then there's this human side of it, that they are individuals who show us how to be more than what we can be.
Yeah.
And they can show us that you can use your status, or you can use all your powers to also affect individual change and inspire individuals.
Mine is the same, only mine is Batman. No, I mean, I have a bunch of those comics. I mean, there was a long time where comics sort of structured my life meaningfully, because they provided those kinds of moments for me and those feelings. I still have a lot of feelings stored in comic book experiences, and that's sort of what I try and dig for when I read comic books now. But often when I'm editing videos, but there's, I think it was Gotham Knights. I'll try and track it down. And there's this scene with this repeat felon sitting in his parole officer's office. His parole officer's like, you ditched the past 2 months. I didn't think we'd see you again. And he's like, listen, yeah, I know. I ditched a bunch. I wasn't really serious about this whole thing. I mean, I got mixed up with my old crew again, which was great. We were pulling a job. And wouldn't you know it, we're in Gotham, the Batman shows up. Because that's basically what Batman does if you're a criminal in Gotham. He just shows up and wrecks your day. He's like, how do you feel about bruises? But Batman didn't beat him up. He was getting away. And Batman looked him dead in the eyes. And he knew his name. And he said it. And he said, you're better than this. And he hightailed it out of there. And he hightailed it to his parole officer's office. And he's like, Batman knows who I am. And he thinks I can do something more than what I'm doing right now. I mean, it is that notion that comics can inspire us. And those are the sort of comics that I seek out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really interested in sort of comics that are just about beating people up. I want comics that have strong feels, comics that expose characters' vulnerabilities. Not in the sense of losing their powers, but in the sense of, being genuinely emotional. You know, that moment when Batman tells Nightwing or Robin that Robin is better at everything than he is, because Dick Grayson can have a functional life as a human being,
mm-hmm.
and fight crime, and Batman can only do one of those things,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of that tacit acknowledgement that he is fundamentally broken. The downside, of course, is then you go back to all the punchy bits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like any other series, long-running series. You sort of take the moments that you take those moments you can find, and you hold on to them. There's a whole bunch of them in Gail Simone's Birds of Prey, which are awesome. And there's a lot. I mean, that was what Transmetropolitan got me into, was those sort of really just vitally human moments that you can't capture. You can capture it in writing,
mm-hmm.
in novels, but the art from the comic books fills in those blanks, and more importantly than filling in those blanks, it introduces you to new visuals that you never would have imagined before.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting how we both...
It's not that surprising. We both work in ethics. We both spend a lot of time inspirational stuff and heroes. And
a lot of times, I'm usually, my default is thinking that we're going to fall on different sides of the spectrum. It's kind of interesting. My example is Superman, yours is Batman. Although, when you started
talking... I may have done that on purpose.
Yeah, when you told your story, there's this... Because I also sometimes just enjoy the static images or static paintings, like when Alex Ross does a painting, and there's one of Batman embracing, I think, a child, and there's like, it's a black and white photo except for like the blood running down his arms or whatever, so clearly he was in some sort of battle. But that idea of, yes, they put themselves through incredible hardships because they're the only person who can, or those kinds of things, but at the same time there's always that very like scared, vulnerable person at the end that
That's, I think, the part that bothers me about comics is that notion that there are heroes and there are citizens. And some comics do that and some comics don't. So last weekend, I'm dating this podcast because it was not actually last weekend, but a while back, I was at a superhero wedding, which was rad. You will have seen footage of it in the superhero wedding vlog, which is over Ryan's face. Bam. But, which reminds me, I have to fill in that vlog later tonight. No, it was the first wedding in a long time I hadn't spoken at, which was weird because it was the first wedding in a long time where I'd prepared a thing to say. Which is, what makes heroes isn't powers. I mean, there are lots of heroes that don't have powers. Batman doesn't have powers. Green Arrow doesn't have powers. Arsenal doesn't have powers. Oracle doesn't have powers.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't will, because there are lots of heroes who are reluctant heroes. It isn't courage, because there are lots of heroes who are cowards. It isn't you know, the ability to overcome fear. It isn't the it isn't strength or speed or ability. The things that comics, and I think the best comics, teach us about what makes people heroes, and this is true, I think, in Marvels, is heroes hear that call and answer it. Full stop. That is, I mean, that is what makes them different. I mean, what makes Superman a hero is not that he has laser vision and flight and super strength and all that stuff. What makes Superman a hero is that he recognizes a need for a person like him, and he does everything he can to fulfill it. It's what makes Batman a questionable hero, is there's an open question about whether there is a need for Batman. Should Batman do the things that he does? Wonder Woman left the island of Themyscira because there was a need. I mean, Wonder Woman is most famously a sort of feminist icon, and when she was created, and it was, you know, is that notion that there is a need for not just a hero, but a hero like her. That there is a, you know, there is a call. Oracle has that same call. She's like, I can't be Batgirl anymore. What can I do? Oh God! It turns out I'm a super genius. Hmm. And the things like the things I do now save more lives than they ever have. You know, there are all these heroes who that what they respond to is the needs of others. And I mean, at the wedding, what I was going to say is that, I mean, when you have a wedding, what you do is you invite all of the people who are heroes in your lives, and you remind them that they are part of something larger. They are part of a league. They're part of a unit. They're part of a family. And that is what makes us stronger together. In the same way that the Justice League is stronger as a unit than they are as individuals. And that is why they do what they do. Also because doing what they do sells a whole bunch of comics. I mean, how else are people going to buy Aquaman comics? But there is this... I mean, it is... Here is a need, and here is the ability to answer it. I mean, as a kid, that's what I remember about heroes, is, you know, you want to step into those shoes. And Superman isn't just a guy who flies or a guy who beats people up. Superman is a guy who does what he can. The fact that he can do so much more doesn't matter. What matters is when somebody is in trouble, or when somebody, you know, needs help, whether that help is physical or whether that help is emotional, Superman does what he can to do it. He doesn't always succeed, but he's like, well, I gotta try.
Yeah, there's a wonderful scene in another one of Alex Ross's books. It was a tabloid book, Superman Hope? Superman Justice? It was like a large... I don't know if I had that one or if I had the Batman one.
I have the Shazam one.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And there's a scene in there where he's carrying goods on his back, like a shipping container full of goods over some... I imagine at the time it was still a Middle Eastern country. And they spotted on radar, and they shot up a missile. And of course, he's fine. But all of this aid that he was bringing to some crisis area was all just poof, gone. And instead, and then the last, before he turned the page, the last image is just him on his knees in the desert with his head down, like... No matter what he does, there's always going to be things that he can't do because of the ignorance mm-hmm. of others, or because of, you know, the conflict of others.
But he could have phoned in a flight path.
Probably. I have a sneaky suspicion it didn't have a lot to do with air traffic control.
But. Probably. But, yeah. I mean, comics matter because they taught me what heroes do. That is it. I mean, whether those are heroes in dystopian cities, whether those are heroes in mythical fiction, whether those are heroes in far-flung futures or on alien planets or in dream worlds, what they taught me is that heroes are everywhere. And that heroes do what needs to be done.
So, we've talked about our history of comic books, and we've both admitted that we've ebbed and flowed, we've had comics, fell out of comics. We're both currently in a phase where we are not in comics as heavily.
Yeah.
So, it feels like there's a good opportunity for us to maybe kind of get back into it. I don't know. Is there something that you know of out there that... Not like get back into it fully, but is there something that... Of the tens of thousands of comics that you read, do you know if there's anything that you would probably want to dip your toe into? Any storylines?
I'm super behind. I really want to read Saga, which actually came out a bunch of years ago, but I've heard really good things. I stopped like really reading comic books before I got Twitter, mm-hmm. but I follow a lot of comic writers on Twitter. I mean, obviously I follow Warren Ellis because I'm a huge fan. I follow Gail Simone. I follow Matt Fraction and Greg Rucka, and, you know. And I think I'd really like to read some of their newer stuff because I would have the opportunity to talk with them about it. Whether they answer me or not is sort of immaterial. It's the opportunity to reflect on it and ask a question to the author. I mean, it's like that moment when you're working on a philosophy paper and you realize that this weird thorny question you have could actually be answered because the author is still alive and has an email address. Like, worst case scenario, they don't answer you, but if you do get an answer, then you're just like, thanks, man. Wicked. So yeah, I mean, any of their new stuff. I know Greg Rucka was doing Batwoman up until maybe 6 months ago, a year ago. So there was a thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd be intrigued. I mean, I love Gail Simone's work on Secret Six, and
let's see. At the top of the show, I said I want to get into more Daredevil stuff. So I know that there was Jeff Loeb's Daredevil Yellow. There was I don't remember what the line was, but it was when they moved a bunch of their grittier characters over, and that's where you had the Brian Michael Bendis.
Oh, like Marvel Max and stuff like that?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was the Max line, but it was something like that. You had Daredevil, I think Punisher went over there. I have a ton of
the Punisher Max stuff. It is weird and dark.
Yeah, so, but I hear that was really well received. Gail Simone, I hear I should... I think you've told me, so I wouldn't mind seeing the Birds of Prey stuff. World War Hulk or a Planet Hulk, because apparently those were really interesting. You know, blasting the Hulk off of the Earth to keep it safe, and he crash lands on a gladiator planet. And I also want to go back and check out a lot of those things that eventually got made into movies, like Alan Moore's original... League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good time. Maybe The Watchmen, but I don't know. I think I know enough about it that I'm not gonna discover.
We have a copy of Watchmen on the vlog shelf. It's been there for a year and you are welcome to read it.
Everybody has
a copy of Watchmen.
Yeah, it's not that I want the dark grittiness. It's more like I have more of an affinity for the classic British canon, so to read his take on it.
I like how you refer to Watchmen as the classic British canon. Oh, it is one of the greatest graphic novels.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, fair enough.
That British canon.
Ah, yes, yes.
Now my comic.
I also have a copy of King Solomon's Mines, if you want.
So I think I might want to start there. But the main thing I want to do next.
Sorry, I'm just looking for my copy of King Solomon's Mines.
I think my next steps is just to go down to the comic book shop, look on the shelf for any trade paperback. I want to collect it in trade. I don't want to start with individual issues. I want to go and find a self-contained unit, or at least one volume of a self-contained unit, and just find one where the artwork speaks to me and just pick it up and go with it. I think that's what I want to do. Maybe
recommend your comics to Huck in the comments, also to me, but mostly to Huck
for sure. Tell me what I should
read.
He's
the one that's going to read them.
I have disposable income at the moment, and I think that we could come back maybe next year.
Help Ryan spend his money.
Yeah. And we can come back next year and do a follow-up podcast of comics that we have read since then.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, as always, it is late. But I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And we're signing off.
Stay super.
Nice, nice. I would have gone with stay heroic, but stay super is way better. I like it. Oh man, that actually wound up being heavier than we expected.
I know. I was gonna comment on that in the middle, but I decided to hold off. But yeah, I mean, but that was a good kind of heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a sad heavy. It was more introspective heavy.
Yeah.